Hey everybody, Stu Smith here, and Jeff Nichols is back. Good to see you, sir. And
Yes, ma'am.
we're doing another Tactical Fitness Report here, 225, I think it is. We've been doing this for a while now.
One or two of them, I think.
And anyway, we're going to talk about mistakes. Just like I kind of messed up that whole introduction, we're human. We all make mistakes. So,
Perfect.
let's learn from them. Don't beat yourself up about it too much. Just learn from them and move on and get a little better, get a little smarter. And what we're going to do is kind of hit the ball back and forth today and just discuss some of the many mistakes that we have seen people make throughout the years that may or may not have self-corrected or learned how to do something correct. But they're just common mistakes that I think a lot of people make throughout this journey into a dream of becoming a member of the Spec Ops community. Right. And you could even apply this to any goal, really, if you think about it, because some of these are just lack of preparation and lack of research and understanding and things like that that typically goes with an immature mindset going into these journeys. But I for me, one of the biggest mistakes I've seen, Jeff, and I have two of them, the biggest mistakes I've seen is just walking into a recruiter's office and saying, "I want to serve." Right? And that's it.
No plan.
And
That's
And yeah, like I want to be this, you want to do something in the Spec Ops world. But you've done nothing to do that. You have just been recently inspired to go do that, but you have done no homework, no research, no preparation whatsoever. And you walk into a recruiter's office and say, "I want to be a SEAL." Hey, that's great that you're inspired, right? And I think we all have gone through that motivational, inspirational, turn it into habits and discipline journey. But if you have not done that, you are so far behind the eight ball that you just,
That's
chances
like the
are you
half
won't
the game.
even get accepted. You won't even get accepted because you can't even pass a PST. So that's the first mistake I've seen. You just walk in the recruiter's office just because you want to go do something.
Yeah, no, I think that kind of sums up, and I think the genesis of why we kind of ha had this conversation, and uniquely we're like, this is a great topic, because it's there's so much about this that we could unpack in so many different directions, because you and I see such a unique demographic, right? That we were just reminiscing about. And it's like I don't. There's two things again that I love about training the population we do. I'll stick with my two, is that they are the majority of them are extraordinarily motivated, like crazy motivated, right?
Yes.
Most all like high, like almost all of them are like almost all of them are in their way motivated, especially in a group setting, right? But it just like what you're saying, so many of them have, I think, there's, I don't want to unpack this too much. I think the other side, too many of them show up, even with that sense of motivation, they show up and there's this belief, and I think it's a misbelief, it's a misunderstood that all the hard work that they've done, right, to them was actually in reading and listening to podcasts and consuming information without actually putting their physical body to the test at the same rate that they were consuming intellectual information about not really even the journey, but more people's end state.
Ah, yes.
So
Yeah.
there is this real true motivation to want to go do this. But when these people are confronted with the people that not only want to really freaking do it, but they've really not only thought about the end state, but the process. And then they're not like they really have a hard time listening to the coach or the person, me, Catherine, because they are so inside measuring themselves about the person that's really authentic because they can see it too.
Yeah, you made a really good point earlier about the consumption of such a vast amount of information out there, but really no application of knowledge and work, right? Right. And
Authentic work, not just, I got to be there every morning. I got to. Not, oh, I want to. I got to figure this sucker out, man.
Yeah,
Big
and you know,
difference.
I have seen people who have not been on a great training program, right? But their life situation built something in them that was indestructible, right?
Yes.
And they were able to endure all of Spec Ops training. They were, because of their just hard work ethic and growing up, you know, working every day at 4 o'clock to 6 a.m. and, you know, to get work done on a farm or, you know, help pay the bills at the house and then go to school, finish school up, you know, and then enlist at a, as a teenager and just be one of the youngest guys going through there, which I do not recommend because most 18-year-old kids just aren't physically, emotionally, mentally prepared for that journey. But there are some unicorns out there that are just unbelievable. And if you think you are that person and you have not really been put to a test day after day of your life and worked to improve yourself in the long term, not just some short term 4 week workout plan to ace a PST, right? You've actually learned how to slowly scoop that mental toughness, you know, addition to your life by working out when you don't feel like it and getting something done when you don't feel like it, and then getting up early and going to school and going to work and then working out afterwards when your dog tired. You know, those are just little things that I think, if they're not a part of your life prior to going, you probably haven't thoroughly prepared yourself for the type of journey that you're about to go through, because there's going to be so many days where you are just dog tired. You got stuff to do. You can't go to sleep because you got 10 different things on the to-do list before they have to be done in the morning. And, you know, you're cold, you're wet, you're tired, you're hungry. And if you haven't looked at it, the day has turned into night. Next thing you know, you're thinking, what am I doing to myself? Why am I doing this? And if you don't have an answer for that, it's done. It really is. So it's, you know, I want to just, you know, I wanted to talk about mistakes, but what happens because you are so ill prepared, that snowball just gets bigger and bigger, and it just hits you like that in the middle of your training, and you just forget why you were motivated in the first place to join.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're nailing the head though, Stu. I mean, because I think you are on target with talking about mistake. That is the biggest mistake in and of itself is people, like, if there's anything that I can say in this podcast, this is it. Let me be very specific. If you spend more time in your head thinking, working yourself into a frenzy, conceptualize what it would be like, what it must be like, what it must be like to be somebody else doing it, like all those, what it, all that, into all those thoughts. If that is going on more than you are physically running, swimming, and lifting weights, you have your priorities completely out of whack. Because it's not that we don't want you to conceptualize and think about what you want to do and your hopes and dreams. That's not it at all. But if you're spending so much time reading and absorbing and trying to conceptualize an idea without that, because that is what mental toughness is. It's not, you don't access mental toughness through thinking. You access it in the physical moments, whether they're comfortable, discomfort, whatever you want to label them as, those moments where your body is telling you otherwise, but you know, hey, because of this goal, it's oriented through this discomfort. Through this discomfort, with mind being mindful of my safety still, because if I master my movements through all this training of discomfort, when that test of discomfort comes, well, then I know one thing for sure, I shouldn't have to worry about getting hurt. Then I'm only, what I'm really doing is I'm testing what we're really trying to test. Did I physically prepare enough to acquaint my discomfort and my okayness with my discomfort to make me go, I see you, discomfort, and now I'm going to work through you right now in this moment of test. That is mental toughness. Yeah. It is actuated after the fact. It is not predetermined through consumption of intellectual information by someone else's experiences. It's yours.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Yeah. That's a good point. Because, you know, I have found, you know, throughout the years, you know, especially my years of preparation, that I had to do workouts that forced me to go to a happy place in my head, right? Almost like I had to dissociate a little bit from what was going on, whether it was monotony or cold or just painful.
Perfection.
Right. Like, yeah.
Focus. Like, hey, I just need to do this, these 10 reps with real focus. Right. Something like that's those. You're right, man. I love because you hear people successful like you, and when they give back in their coaching and teaching, they do it. And all these, hey, these are all these mental moments. I coach myself. That's how you coach yourself.
Yeah.
You extrapolate it out of those moments and you broadcast that to yourself. This is what I'm doing. Little pieces of a success. And that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Hey, let's get a little less metaphysical here and go into the actual specifics. Here's a specific mistake I see all the time. And this could be a well-prepared person, right? But they're missing something because they didn't assess themselves properly or regularly to really know they have a weakness, or they're just blind to their weakness because they're doubling down on their strengths with an idea of, you know, I'm just going to be the best runner or swimmer when I'm there, and I'll just suck up my weakness, you know, as a gut check. Well, let me tell you, going into it with that kind of mindset, yes, you're going to have to suck up something. You're going to have a weakness at Bud's, but you can do a lot to make it less of a weakness and less of a gut check by actually practicing what you suck at doing. So, you know, depending on your athletic history, you're going to be really good and not so good at some activities, right? The endurance guy is great at running, swimming, maybe not so good with load bearing and strength of calisthenics at first. Then they crush the calisthenics, but they're still not strong, right? They got some good muscle stamina and endurance, but they're still not strong to handle the kind of loads of rucking and logs and boats and fireman carries and those kind of things. So they're doubling down on their endurance to be the fastest runner and the fastest swimmer, but really no one cares, right? If you can't get through Hell Week, right? You know, it really doesn't. So, and I've seen it on the flip side too. I've seen guys that are just like, you know, the 4 mile timed run is going to be my weakness, you know, and, you know, they just get stronger and keep getting stronger and bigger.
Thinking that that's somehow going to compensate for that weakness. Right.
Right.
Work toward their strengths.
Yeah. And, you know, so they just get slower. They wind up, you know, being too big to make it through the O course because their grip gives out. You know, there's so many cascading issues that occur when you ignore a weakness, because it's going to be exposed almost immediately when you start day one of your first phase. I promise you.
You bet. Agreed. Like, I'm going to piggyback. I think that's great. And a kind of caveat, because like, My big point would be number two would be like, in the same token, when guys come to train with us, there seems to be, or people in general thinks like in their head, they're trying to train to be this, what they in their head visualize as a Navy SEAL, this big, strong, 220 pound guy, like, or like you and I, like athletic dudes, right? That's what they see in their heads. But when we get them, I go, no, guys, I get that. That's great. But this isn't what you need to get through BUDS.
Right.
Like it's, you got to first get yourself to be, got to get durable enough to get through this big test.
Yes.
Right. And then the follow-up test of SQT or whatever it may be, like the selection courses for everyone is going to take, you know, 6 months to 18 months to get through all of them, depending on branch of service and timeline and weight and all that stuff. So it's a big test of durability, not just physical, mental, but since we're just talking really the physical, right? It's one of the first things that we try to tell guys, listen, okay, we're preparing you for selection. And then through the process of preparation of selection, it's part, you're getting educated saying, hey, this is how I'm preparing from it. And then from there, you can create some variety once you know how to make yourself durable, right? If a person can train well and make themselves real durable for these selection courses, then they can finally train for what they kind of perceive in their head, what they're trying to be. And that's like putting the, I'd say, so that very long statement is like a lot of guys put the cart before the horse. They try to train like they've already been through selection and they're going to be this awesome Navy SEAL with all this freedom of time compared to a BUD student.
You know, that's a really good point, because the way I define this is like, you have to think of this journey in three phases. Phase one, you're not going to even get accepted if you don't pass that fitness test. And you want to do it well. You want to exceed the standards. So phase one is PST training. Phase two is getting through the training. Now you want to build your body so you can handle the selection process, which means longer runs, rucks, load bearing, swims with fins, you know, all of those things that a lot of people neglect because they're just stuck on phase one all through their preparation. You know, that's why I like this weekly PST that the recruiters do, is really just getting people good at the PST, and then they wonder why they're not getting through BUDS because they've spent no time preparing for what's coming. And then phase three is the guys that you see on YouTube jacked and, you know, lifting heavy weights and, you know, hopping out of helicopters, running upstairs, doing their cool things. And, you know, that they don't need to train like a BUD student anymore. You know, they have a tactical, they train more tactically than they do physically, you know, to get their skills to that level. And you don't have to train 3-4 hours a day physically doing that type of stuff. So anyway, that is where I kind of define phase one, two, and three of tactical fitness. And many people get lost on that. I would say that's a big mistake. People neglect phase one and two. People neglect phase one and two and do phase three, or people never even go to phase three. I've seen guys in the teams still doing BUDS workouts.
Exactly. And that's why I like what you're saying too. Cause like between phase one and two, your phase one and two, for me, there's a real emotional difference. Because if someone comes to me, to your very first point of this video and podcast, is if someone's come completely uneducating themselves of the whole process, right? It's not that I don't want to help someone get good at a PST and do that formally, but I also really like the idea that, hey man, you've done your homework, you've been putting the work in, you've tried a bunch of things, you know, let's say a 6-8 month period, you've really put a real effort into it. So then you can come to Stu or I and go, hey, I've tried these things. They haven't worked super great, but I've been doing over this time and here's my effort. Like, you know, right away, someone's given their effort instead of, hey, can you help me do everything? Can you hold my hand through the first, like a person that does just the basic homework, listens to you or I or something for a little while, or even a bunch of other just simple coaches out there to get those PST numbers up. Like that shows the biggest build of character type of athlete that, so that's my advice to you of like, if you're coming to Stu or I or any coach, honestly, respectfully, without doing any homework. Like, that's the first sign that, man, you at least be able to get to the PST numbers yourself.
Hey, here's a big one, Jeff.
Your hair just turned gray all of a sudden.
What are the exercises in the PST?
Oh, right.
That's a question, right? What are the standards? What are the minimum standards of the PST? Right. So there's these questions. How far is the run in the PST? You know, if I'm getting these kind of questions, I realize what you just said is the opposite, right? That guy has not put in any work to understand this process or even start the process on his own. Right. Which is fine. Or you got to start somewhere.
How often? No, seriously, not. I'll be nice here. How often do you have parents inquiring for their kids?
Yeah.
I've had like two. I can think of two or three in like memory. So it happens.
I can get it if he's like a 15-year-old kid. But yeah. You know,
yeah, for someone to come to our 6-week class,
18, 19, 20 years old.
That was 18 and 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And the parent was talking through the child, or like vice versa. Like they wanted to come here for 6 weeks, but we're like, well, what does your son want to do? It's like, well, this is what we want to do. Like, we want to talk, like, put your son on the Zoom, not your parent. It was, anyways, goofiness. So,
yeah. That's I get it. You know, sometimes when the parent's paying for things, you know, they want to know what's going on. I get that part. Yeah. But at the same time, I usually tell people I only talk to the student. I mean, I'm happy to answer a parent's questions.
You bet.
But I only talk and coach to the student. So,
agreed.
Yeah. No, that happens. But anyway, it goes back to just confusing the process and not really understanding the process. And you're confused because you don't really understand the process.
Agreed.
Because you've done no effort to do it. And the worst one is someone who says, I'm already in the delayed entry program and I need to take the PST. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Well, what are your PST scores? No, you don't understand. I've never taken the PST. Right. So he doesn't know. And he's already in. Right, he's already talked to the recruiter, already signed, got through MEPS, and now he's got to pass his PST. That he has no idea what's going on. So that is where a good portion of the recruits going to boot camp are in. Right, I mean, I can't tell you how many of my guys go.
The aloofness is astounding.
Yeah, and we wonder why we're getting 80% attritions. Right, it's just because people are just ill prepared. And there's no reason to be ill-prepared, especially with all the information that's out there. There's too much information out there.
It seems a bit of a paradox. I mean, to you and I and a lot of people, I have this very paradoxical because you're like, you and I didn't have access to any sort of coaching for this subject, we'll call it, right?
No internet? I didn't.
No. Like I had bare, that you definitely didn't. I had just the tail end of it. Or tail be the front end of it, you know, 96. Yeah. But it was like, but in terms of reaching out and finding information, it was almost like a ghost.
until
you went to a Navy recruiter, and that's where you're like, you're like, I think I'm getting official information about the SEAL stuff, like the path, the way in, or whatever. Like, so
this is what I had, Jeff. You remember these?
Oh, Lordy, I do. Yes, I do.
God Almighty,
where did you find that? I still have like the big one. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these had all the PST scores on them, you know, and all the minimums.
There it is, nostalgia for sure, right? It's like I think that kind of I'm not boo-booing technology or insane, but it is kind of different times. I look back and go, the only way for you to discover information was minimal intellectual information. All you could do is conceptualize through movies or thought or hearsay, but you cut like the occasional Time magazine or something expose on it or whatnot, right? Because that was your buds class, wasn't it?
Yeah, you didn't waste a lot of time.
You always were
applying ideas.
That's it. Like there wasn't a place to get drowned into intellectual time.
Yes. Yeah.
So, whew.
Okay. So,
but see, here, but here, let the other swing though, is this is the, I think the big cool thing is within our, this negativity is there on the flip side though, man, the people that are absorbing what you and I offer, they're like,
yeah,
holy crap. They're like superhuman.
Oh yeah. It's so funny when they go to take their PST for the first time and then they go take it with people who have been failing week after week after week.
Yes.
And they walk in there and just like, I was the only one that passed it. I was the only one that passed it. And they say, how'd you do that? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And they're like,
but they're so unwilling to go practice. Like I saw a video the other day of this little league coach going, Johnny, how often do you practice away from me? He's like, none. He goes, I don't understand how you think you could get better if you're not doing anything within your free time with any sort of effort.
Yeah. Yeah. That's classic.
Like that happens. Like that's, but again, it's like, I'm trying to find compassion.
Yes.
But it's really hard to look at the Navy SEALs or Green Berets or MARSOC Raiders with fucking skulls and crossbones of like, hey, are you naive to the effort needed to this? That I've had a time where compassion and that reality that like was, I had never experienced being a Navy SEAL, of course, when I was 22, when I really pulled the trigger, so to speak, of joining the military. But I had done honest thought and soul searching that day. Hey, go home before you go to your recruiter, think on it, do some soul searching, and come back in the morning and sign your papers. Like I did that.
But also, your whole life up to that point was work.
Work.
Athletics. Education.
Yep.
You know, physiology. I mean, you had kind of had this athletic and academic history that took you to that point with a solid foundation to take it from there.
Right. History had shown me that real effort had provided a real opportunity for real success. I had experienced it through life and sport. You're right. Like, I think though that you're right. We kind of go back. Last thing is like, but because you and I project the truth, you and I have steadily said, work hard. And other guys do too. Tons of guys with our background have said, work hard, be consistent, do the right thing.
Don't quit.
Yet you still get the email that goes, hey man, I'm in the Dell Energy program, but what are the standards? Like, whoa, man.
Yeah.
You missed it.
There are just some people that are just not missed on it. Track. I mean, no. Let's just leave it that.
There's
that.
A spectrum for sure.
Yeah, that's a good way. Good on the spectrum. All right. Continue to potentially dangerous training, like close to your ship out date. So what I mean by this is like, I've seen triathletes who are still riding road bikes, you know, and I've seen some horrible things happen. You know, they get in a wreck, they get hit by a car, dislocate their shoulder, concussions.
Boom,
you know,
they lose everything. They lose their contract.
Lose everything.
They're going to serve.
Yeah.
Military is something crazy.
And that's just a triathlete, right? Yeah. We talked about the rugby players and the football players and the contact sports guys and the mixed martial arts guys, you know, that are just constantly banging themselves up, you know, unable to train. And then people doing like 6 months out, doing a big gut check just to see, I want to make sure I have some mental toughness, but then they go run a 50 mile or 100 mile race. And then they wonder why their hips don't work for the next 6 weeks, you know? So they've just lost so many miles of training just to get that 100 mile test under their belt before they go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just the fine line between trying to build mental toughness and stupidity. The way I always explain it is to people like, all right, you're about to go run 100 miles this week. Okay. I'm going to do 25 or this. You're about to go 100 miles this weekend. I'm going to keep doing my 20-25 this week. Right. At the end of the month, I'm going to have probably close to 100 miles of running. Right. Let's see at the end of the month, or the end of 2 months, who has the most miles accumulated, right? And typically what will happen is the guy will run 100 miles, so he starts off way ahead of me, right? I get my 25, my 25, my 25, but he goes 100, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0 because he's broken and he can't run. And he's like slowly getting able to move his hips so he can ride a bicycle by week six, right? And, you know, it's what's the
For
point?
what?
Yeah, if you're training so hard that you're hurting yourself so you can't train, you're
like
not doing it right.
The reality is what this individual, in my opinion, I'm not a psychotherapist, but my opinion, this individual certainly is trying to test themselves.
Oh,
like
sure.
We buzz,
I
like
get
for
it.
whatever reason, right? But like
I
you go,
get it.
But even it's, I'm saying beyond that, that's buzz. That's why a person is already set on the quest to test themselves. That insecurity is so profound. If you are the individual that has to find some sort of, I got to go do this test to somehow test me before I do the test that really matters, that should be your indicator right there. You probably should find a different job or talk to somebody. Like,
yeah.
Figure it out, man, because something inside of you, like if you can even put yourself in a position to be confident enough to go run a 100-miler, that's awesome, man. Like what's missing? You've got it.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
Don't
You
beat
know?
yourself up to prove nothing,
yeah.
and then really disable yourself for the thing that really matters.
Yeah.
That's not like that. That's like that. That right there is like I think we as a culture, as Americans, have really been super good at be tough, the American way. All angst. Great. Like harness that sucker, man. Like no one's questioning you're willing to work hard.
Yeah.
Now let's harness that sucker because we need some real focus. That's what we need. So that's like, I totally agree at that point. Like we see a lot of guys, or not a lot, we see some people that have the best numbers and well, we see some of the most capable. They continue to keep like changing the numbers on themselves. Like, oh, I got to be leaner, faster, stronger, fitter. And they're comparing themselves against single individuals in single sport.
Yeah.
You're like, you're constantly chasing something that's really not comparable. Just because you can, in number, say, I can bench press this much at this body weight, or run this fast, or swim this fast, or do X, Y, or Z at this. It's like, there's no pool of Navy SEAL candidates where you can Google and compare yourself to.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. You know, one thing, and I'm not knocking contact sports and long runs and triathlons and MMA because I've done them all. You know, I played rugby in college up until a year before I shipped to Butts. Like my last semester was my first semester senior year. I played until like probably October, November. And then that was my last time playing rugby. And I shipped to Buds in September the following year. But I gave myself a long time of not doing things that potentially could injure me. Because I could look back every semester I played rugby, I was hurt somehow, right? Ankle sprains, nothing
prioritize.
horrible, you know, stitches, you know, potential concussions, which we didn't measure for back then. You know, it was all kinds of things back then. But anyway, if you're going to do it, just don't do it 6 months out from shipping. That's
right,
my
you for sure
compromise. That's my
agreed
compromise for the people who want to go do that stuff.
Right, agreed.
Yeah.
And also it's like, consider too, like if it's something you've never, ever done, never, ever, ever done too, like that would be something to kind of like, maybe again, it's your life and that, but I see it's not a physical issue at that point. Right. And that's a whole other conversation.
True.
Yep. Yep. So
because
not,
there
I
is
think,
a time that I'm sorry. Go ahead.
For sure. No, I agree. I just think that's, you know, it's, you and I get to speak from this position of seeing a multitude of young 18 to 26 year old kids that want this profession. And you and I we see this population. It's really unique to us, not just because we coach them, but we ourselves experienced much of what they desired in their training. And so it really drives this interesting conversation about, you know, these mistakes, because we see them. These aren't like something that Stu and I are trying to be like, you're wrong for feeling this or doing this. It's like, no.
No, I've made
these things. It's okay. Because here's the thing is anytime a person, specifically you or any institution, they stop being self-critical, right? We get stagnant. We plateau. Yeah. So that's what we're trying to say is mistake isn't, this is a point which way I can't succeed from here. A mistake is like, oh, if I correct this, the likelihood of success increases.
Yes. Adjust. Make the adjustments. Keep on moving.
That's it. Absolutely. Not like you're wrong for, if you experience this, you're wrong. No.
Because somebody, it might have been right for someone else.
You betcha, man. You know, humility. And perspective.
Yeah. So here's another one. Here's a way to kind of end this one. Is there is a time to take your training and recovery 100% seriously. Right? It's almost like you're in season. Right? Yes. You're an in-season athlete now, 6 months out from shipping. You're in season. Take it seriously. Take everything seriously, right? To a point of even overdoing it. And what I mean by that is you go out with your friends, but you're not the one drinking. You know, you're the one driving. You're getting a good night's sleep. You're eating well. You're training hard. You got to work out in the morning. You got to work out in the evening. You got work during the day. You're just staying busy and you're in the zone doing everything that's right to do your best. There's a time to take it seriously. And 6 months out is a really good way to kind of, especially if you're a former athlete, you're kind of like, I'm in season. I'm in my zone. This is what I got to do to get to where I want to be.
I agree. There absolutely 100% is the time in which you should have such structured recovery and difficult training, difficult focus and physical training that orients itself in at least a 6 month period, at least, right? Because that's mental toughness too. Can I do something like this for 6 months? You should be oriented to where you've created such a routine of high intense quality training paired up with equally vigilant, focused care, self-care recovery, that if you get outside of that training or that recovery, it feels weird.
Yeah.
Like going out with friends. Exactly. Won't feel weird if you just have some water and eat the things you can eat, right? Get to bed at the time you should be getting to bed and waking up the same time, right? Your life should be built around, like we say, oh, I got to do all this stuff. No. If you're blessed enough to structure your life for 6 months where that becomes your priority, and if you're freaking blessed enough to have a spouse that will tolerate that and then support it truly, man, because you're not going to get that opportunity time after time in your life. And if you can get that in your youth, hear me again, you're not going to probably get that opportunity again in your life.
Yeah.
So you really can't take it for granted. And that's the other side, how we started it off, man. Like, here's your sign. Like, how do I know someone isn't serious? Or how do I know that someone isn't, you can find someone that was serious about hard work, but they're not sincere about the process.
Yeah.
That I see.
And what it ends up doing, if you can do that and you've been working really hard, taking care of your recovery, you've gotten this discipline for 6 months, and now you're in the training, right? You're at Buds, you're in the training, and you go through your day, and at the end of the day, you're done, and you're like, wait a second. I don't have to go work. I don't have to go work out. I don't have to go study. But I just got to get ready for tomorrow and be on time. That is awesome.
Right? Yeah.
So if you could actually work yourself in a way in your preparation to when you show up for the test, that is a 6 month long test, you're just going to like have all this extra time, believe it or not, that you would normally be focusing on being disciplined, where the school itself does all that for you. Right. Yeah. Like, you don't have to go work out extra. Right. You don't have to, you know, they feed you all you want. You can eat extra if you want, and you just have to show up. It's a great feeling. I remember making that, having that discussion with people. I'm like, wait a second. I don't have to go to class. I don't have to go to practice. I don't have to go to, go study all night. This is awesome.
And it was odd because, like, I remember I knew a guy, a buddy of mine that is actually the CEO at one of the teams on the West Coast now. And on the weekends, I go hang out with him because he had an apartment and I'd get away from the base. And it was so interesting because, like, he'd come home at the end of the night, you know, like 5 o'clock. He'd get home 5:30, maybe at his apartment after the end of the night. And his wife obviously worked as well, you know, both very educated, had very busy lives. But it's like when they convene in the evening, like he couldn't even stay awake, couldn't go to movies. Like it was like eat, 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 and drink as much as he could before he falls asleep on the couch. His wife is waking him up because he's got to get up like at 3:30 because he's got to drive in by. And it's like, it was just one of those things where it was after Buds, and I wasn't married at that point. I was still young and naive too. I just remember hearing it going, I was like, man, I'm so glad I was single. Like in that sense, like, I don't mean, I'm no boo-booing marriage people. No. Like this is not an anti nothing. This is just my experiences looking back and like, you know, Stu kind of struck a nerve there. I was like, oh man, like I remember something like, you're like, man, well, the last thing you want to do at the end of a long night is do anything but recover. But for 6 months, that's what it's going to be like when you get to selection. You're going to be so tired. You need to put emphasis on not overdoing it after the fact. So if your training is oriented to a point such that it demands recovery, it's created more than just a physical recovery habit. It's created this emotional behavior thing. This is what I do. I get thrashed and then I spend time, even though that I'm tired, and I've worked out how to recover when I don't feel like it.
Yes. Yes. That's very good. I like that one. Another one I see, Jeff, is, when I say this all the time, if you're not assessing, you're only guessing. And what I mean by that is, if you're not testing yourselves regularly with specific tests and things that you know are going to be in your future, you are just guessing your performance in the future.
You bet.
So you should know your 4 mile timed run before you go to Buds. You should know what a 2 mile swim with fins is before you go to Buds. All right. Otherwise, if you can't maintain that pace, you now know what you need to work on in order to get through the training. You might be able to crush the PST. That's great. But no one cares about your PST score after day one of Buds, or maybe even prep. I don't think you take it day one of Buds. You take it during prep in order to get to Buds, you know, first phase. So no one cares about how fast you run on a PST. What they want to see is a 4 mile timed run pace in boots and pants on the sand. Right. Yeah. And you got to practice that stuff. So anyway, if you're not assessing, you're only guessing. And that goes for a variety of things. And you and I did a really good podcast a while back ago with the assessment tool that we kind of created with the all the things that they were doing that was successful for Hell Week, you know, with pull-ups and 300 meter sprints and shuttle runs and, you know, 4 mile time runs. Yeah,
we assessed that study that we broke down, that study. That's correct. Yeah,
was a really good one. You can find that one in the, you know, archives over there. But, you know, there's some real good specific numbers that might help you see where others have succeeded with their physical abilities.
Yeah, we preach the same stuff. We tell everyone that we train specifically in person because we have the audience and people that we train regularly, or even like I've said on podcasts before, it's everyone that's training for this, because you and I, we agree on one thing for sure right out of the gate always, is like your timeline. Pick the appropriate timeline, right? Number one. And it's like, once you've done that, once you've established the timeline, you should be testing one PST parameter every single week. Yeah. Push up, pull up, sit up, run, swim, whatever it is, just one a week. Do it, game it, like warm up. Do it to your best effort once a week, one a week, one a week. Easy. And if you do that over and you train appropriate timeline, whether it's 4 months, 6 months, a year, you have all of this data that you can see a trend, just like a stock market. Yep. Say, oh, this is where I'm going up, going down. It's like, what does that mean? Overtraining, undertraining, training just right. Because if you choose the right timeline, you choose a good program, whether it's Stu or I's, you put in real effort, right? And you chart your progress, nothing super complex, over a nice period of time, you will be in what you consider emotive success.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me see. I got another one here, and this is a big debate. And I think this also is a spectrum type issue. And I've seen a lot of people screw it up on one side or the other. Okay. And that is miles per week before you get to Bud's running. Right. Yep. I've seen everything from 20 to 60.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a huge window. That's more than a window. That's a barn door. Right. I mean, that is night and day effort levels, right, to be able to do that, and time spent in that. So I am somewhere in the middle. I will say this. You know, I've seen guys get to Bud's with 50 miles a week, and they did fine. But I've seen guys do 50 miles a week, and they did all slow runs, like 9-minute miles, and they never could pass the 8-minute mile, 4-mile timed run. I have seen that happen. So it depends on what kind of miles. So I always say this. I said, don't do junk miles, right? There's two paces that you need to learn to do well on the PST and your efforts at Bud's. One is a 6-minute mile for a mile and a half. One is a 7-minute mile for a 4-mile timed run. If you're playing with anything different, you know, I get it. You're trying to build your aerobic base with some long, slow distance runs. You can also build your aerobic base with some non-impact cardio, right? You don't necessarily need the junk miles that potentially could just hurt you if you're not a competitive runner or have a decent running history. If you're fairly new to running, running 50, 60 miles a week is probably going to break you along that journey to get up there. You know, there are some people that don't need to run marathons, right? 220-pound dude that's jacked, you know, probably, you know, not necessarily the best running model.
And that's okay.
For those type of bikes. That's fine.
That's
it. You don't
if
have
you're
going to
compare
marathons.
That body type, right? And that's, I think that. That's maybe the big context of this too is, I guess, access to information, we'll just say social media, not to boo-boo it, because obviously we're using it, has created a bit of a culture that, again, like, hey, I can really intellectually focus on this and gain value from it in the physical realm. And that's just also, again, not the case, right? Right. You have to go do it. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that and they just kind of always encompass the kind of what I got taught, lack of attention to detail and all these sort of things that first it wasn't like a lot of things to do other than that, do that, pay attention, do what you're told. Right. And now maybe it's just cause there's different opinions out there, but like when it comes to running for me, I mix some things up a little bit because it depends.
Absolutely.
If you're a beginner, you certainly, the mileage is going to be low, but what I look at is, what does a person need to do? They need to maximally effort for a certain amount of time and distance. And so if a person, this is just a small sample because we mix rucking and running.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what we do.
Got to.
We go from rucking to 20 pounds, 30 pounds, 40 pounds. We have milestones for that. So we know that we're getting, because it's not that, again, we're getting people with very strong will. And when people start getting pain, when they're working really hard, it kind of chips away at their will, or it makes them really get, all right, screw you, I'm gonna go, I'm gonna show you.
Or they
and
push
then the
it,
will,
they hurt, yeah.
Right. So these are again behaviors that stem into all these chronic issues that you and I see regularly. So I go, okay, right. So If you want to get that effort out and your run time isn't doing what it wants and you're starting to get soreness, really simple, man. Get a rucksack, put 20 pounds in it. Do not run.
No, just
walk. But for the time, for the time that you need to effort, you know, and Buds, it's 28 minutes or SF, it's this, or it's a distance. You can go round your block three times. It's a mile and a half because you've got it mapped out or whatever. Pick a known distance or time, put 20 pounds in your back, and I want you to walk as fast. Do not run. Walk as fast as you can over that known given distance or time. And you will see a dramatic distance and how your legs feel if you start combining things like that with, hey, I need to do this running program and thing.
Yeah, that's a great durability builder too. You know, you don't necessarily need a 10-mile slow run when you can do a
5-mile
ruck.
Again, it replaces one dramatically like that, but it also, what it does is goes, hey, I've got the lung capacity. Why are my legs failing me? Well, maybe you were a swimmer. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe you were a swimmer. So your legs quite don't have the ground force managing capability. But if you slow it down just a little bit at that 10 pounds, it allows your tendons and ligaments to assess and create tension better through a range of motion with greater load and a pretty quick velocity. Because I'm saying walk as fast as possible. When you add those things to even a swimmer, you start seeing shin splints become painful shins. They become tight ankles. They become no issues. Then they've gone through this whole spectrum of a proper shin splint healing that you and I kind of look back and go, damn, when did it happen for me? It happened for you on the rugby field.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
On those terrible cleats and just pounded on people's. Mine happened in the baseball field. I got bulletproof shins by being a catcher my entire life.
Yeah. I was a catcher too.
There you go. So
that was my off season working my shins playing a catcher.
Yeah, not that I didn't have shin splints occasionally, but see, I can look back and go, hey, what's your history and things? Yeah. And that's what we see.
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought that was a big debate because I have seen guys, and the answer truly is it depends. I've seen guys get through Buds with 25 miles a week, but they were fast, no junk miles. And they spend a lot of time swimming and biking as the other end of their cardio. So I call it the triathlon method, right? Where a third of your cardio will be running and 2/3 of it will be a non-impact cardio, biking and swimming, right? Nothing wrong with that. That works. You can build a great aerobic base with that, as well as, you know, if you really push some of those runs, like make them fast, you know, and you can build the same type of durability with fewer miles, you know, in that 20 to 30 range a week versus trying to hit 50 to 60.
Right.
And you can focus on other things. You know, next thing you know, totally you're hitting 27, 30 mile, 4 mile runs and you're like, guess I need to focus on something else. Yeah. Just try to maintain that. I'll work on my 2 mile swim with fins or, you know, ankle durability so you can handle fins. And all that.
Because again, if you're a good runner, say you are good running, why? Like you're running these 7 minute, sub 7 minute runs. If you're running sub 7 minutes, you're going for Buds. Let me just say this kind of, this is kind of
ready. Standard,
right? And you are running 20, you know, 20 miles a week and you're cruising sub sevens. Like, hear me, that's enough. You're doing awesome now. Right. That's why you can do all those other things. If you don't need to take that 20 to 27 and see, you've already got it. So now when you get out of the teams, and you want to run and be this heavy, strong, jacked runner because you have this beautiful beach to go run on all the time. You can afford the best footwear, the best trainers, and the best access of knowledge that then you can apply, because you can't apply all of this high-performance stuff. Really, we're just trying to get you durable.
Yeah.
You know, and then the high-performance, air quotes I'm giving you, talk really happens. That's when we're just trying to prepare you for the meat grinder. So I think it's a bit of a perception change also. That's okay. Cause preparing with a really good foundation gets you then through SQT with this really healthy body that then you like, oh, this is what I want to be and do. And I want to build it and do it this way. That's when you can really access that other side of your will.
How about you, Jeff? You got anything else? I made a list before we started this thing, and I went through my list. I mean, there's other things people screw up, obviously, but I think between the prep and the phase two preparation, meaning preparing yourself to get through the training. These are the most common I've seen.
Yeah.
I got one more now to think about it. Neglecting treading. Like, if you think treading is easy, you haven't tried treading for 10 minutes.
Right. Just, you have to try. Like, again, that's the thing too, is right. Like, I think this is like things that are known now, like, you know, you have to tread, you know, you have to do 50 meter one underwater, you know, you have to do certain things, obstacle courses and whatnot, put logs overhead, all these things. Like, yes, no one's really going to have access to the real deal, but if you haven't tried to at least experience it close to its nature, so you can assess how much more work do I do? How much more will do I need to accomplish something that is really just a perception?
Yeah. Is it a technique issue or is it a conditioning
right.
issue?
Right. Is it an effort right. issue? Right. Like,
yeah.
and that's okay. Like, and I think that it's weird to, my big thing to piggyback this, I think this oddly just stems from this weird, like, if you fail, you shouldn't try. Like, no, why are we testing ourselves? If we're trying to figure out where I need to go.
Yeah.
Like, then I think, well, I don't know what, I'm not sure why I see this shift in that in the emotion. Not like you and I, I'm sure, are pretty sheltered from it. Like, we really still get this big, the demographic we get are like 98%, like full, like cayenne pepper, you know, I get that, but we still have to deal with regular culture in our lives and in ourselves and stuff. But we see, like, there's still this real lack of, I don't know. Like, this is what I teach my son. I'm like, I'm trying to express to him, like, I felt appreciation for myself or pride appropriately when I knew that I was helping my parents out, type situation, or your coach. It's like, yeah. Then you're helping your own. Not talking brown nosing. Like, hey, I'm trying to do the right thing here, even if it's by yourself, for yourself. It's like, whatever happened to that? Like, you come to the teacher as fully prepared as possible. Well, the teacher goes, okay, all right, okay. Like, you're either really, really, like, good at reading internet stuff, or you're really good at reading internet stuff. I want to see how much of this you've applied instead of just reading the latest book.
Yeah.
And when I see someone that's read it all, done it all, tried it all, and then you've seen, like, holy crap, this dude came here prepared and practiced. This is going to be fun to watch this kid. Really, no real pat on my own back. I just get to watch this person get coached in an environment that he trusts, and then he's going to go off and succeed without me anyway. It doesn't matter about me. He's good.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Yep.
That's good. Well, as normal, as it gets closer to noon, my dog starts barking. So
there it is. Yeah, mine just moved. Yeah.
Gets a little busy here after 11 o'clock in the morning. But I appreciate your time, Jeff. I think this is a good one. You know, there's so many more mistakes. If we come up with a part two to this one, which I'm sure I got like three or four more floating in my head that you just brought up. You know, a good idea. So maybe we can do another one here real soon and just continue on this discussion, because it really is important. You know, it's okay to make mistakes, and you're not going to make them unless you're applying some of the knowledge that you've picked up. So get out there, try it, see if it works, assess yourself.
Yes.
If it's working, keep doing it, right? Don't make a change. If you see something working, keep going. Right. If you see things stalling or it's not working, might want to readjust and figure out how to make that a little bit better.
So, yeah, man. Yeah. Like, go out there, get all that knowledge, make a bunch of mistakes, and turn it into wisdom.
There you go. That's the only way to do it. That's cool, man.
It is.
All right. So, Jeff, where can people find you?
Well, if you're in physically Virginia Beach, but Instagram, Jeff CSCS is where I call, like, my digital home, but if you need to find us, it's performancefirstus.com.
Yep.
And that's where, again, other membership options and in-person training, and really the master behind the scenes, Catherine, as you and I both know, is really behind the scenes of all this stuff. So check us out.
Yep. Yeah. Go check out that, especially if you're down in Virginia Beach. I'm in Maryland, stusmithfitness.com. Check that out as well. Tons of articles and programming as well. So until next time. We'll see you later.
Appreciate you.
You bet.